We know the story very well of the Bnei Ruvei, Bnei Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe and their conversation with Moshe Rabbeinu. What happens? These 2.5 tribes tell Moshe Rabbeinu that they want to stay on the other side of the Yarden, because after all, Gidros Tzon Nivnel Demekneinu Po Va'arim L'Tapeinu. We want to build for our sheep, we want to prepare and build homes for our sheep, and also cities for our children as well, on this side of the Yarden, and this is a perfect place for our cattle to graze. Moshe responds that if they helped their brethren in fighting the wars, that they can go ahead and benu arim letapchem v'gidros letonchem. Do what you want, build what you want, but first you have to go and help fight the war. First you have to help out the rest of Klal Yisrael. You have to show a sense of achdus. You have to show a sense of willingness to fight for your brothers. And then once you do that, gezunt heit, you can go back to the other side of the Yarden and you can build cities for your children and places for your sheep as well. And the Medrash notes the difference between the formulation of the 2.5 Shvatim and the formulation of Moshe Rabbeinu. They both speak about children, they both speak about sheep, but they do it in totally different ways. The Medrash says, Zeu shamar ha-kasov, lev chacham li-yamino, v'lev ksil li-smolo. That a chacham's heart is on his right side, a wise man's heart is on his right side, and lev ksil, the heart of a fool, is l'smolo, is on his left side. What does that mean? So the Medrash explains. Lev chacham liyamino, elu heim hatzadikim shem noslim libam latorah, shehum yamin, shenemarei miyamino eshtas lamo. Lev chacham liyamino refers to tzadikim whose energy and focus is on the Torah, which is said to be on the right side. Miyamino eshtas lamo refers to the Torah. And lev ksil l'smolo, that refers to Rishaim who are only interested in amassing wealth. That on the left side you have wealth and honor. Dover Acher, says the Medrash, Lev Chacham Liyamino, Ze Moshe. That's a reference to Moshe Rabbeinu. Velev Ksil Lismolo, Elu Bnei Ruvenu Bnei God. That's the other 2.5 tribes that had this discussion with Moshe. Why are they called a fool? Sha'asu es ha'ikr tafel ves ha'tafel ikr. They put what was supposed to be primary as a secondary priority in their lives, and they put what was supposed to be a secondary priority as the primary priority in their lives. In what sense? She'chivivu es mamonam yosem min ha'nefashos. They valued their money more than they valued the souls of their children. Shehein omrim l'moshe gidros tzon nivne l'meknenu po ve'arim l'tapenu. They said to Moshe Rabbeinu, first and foremost, we want to build places for our sheep to be able to live and for our sheep to be able to thrive. Oh yeah, and by the way, we'd also like to build something for our children. Amr lahem Moshe, so Moshe says, no, eino klum, ela asu asi ikar ikar, tchila b'nu lechem arim l'tapchem va'achar kach v'gidros l'tzonchem. He says you have it backwards. First you have to build cities for your children. Only once you've built the cities for your children, then you can go and worry about your sheep. But your kids have to come before the sheep. This is the well-known Medrash, famous Medrash, everybody knows, about this contrast between the 2.5 Shvatim and the way they formulate their priorities, and Moshe Rabbeinu and how he formulates his priorities. Now clearly, the first explanation of the Pasuk about how the Lev Chacham is someone who values the Torah, and the Lev Ksil is someone who values money, is meant to express a very general view of a Chacham and a Ksil, of a wise man and a fool. The latter explanation, which gets into specifics, Moshe Rabbeinu and the 2.5 Shvatim, gives a very specific example. Now, if you look at both examples, both the more general explanation of the Pasuk, as well as the more specific explanation, the fool in both versions is the very same type of person. The fool in both the first version, where he's worried about money, and the second version, where it's the 2.5 tribes, are worried about money. They're worried more about money than anything else. And that's what they have in common. But the description of the Chacham in the first explanation and the description of the Chacham in the second explanation seem to be totally different. In the first version, we're told the Chacham is someone who values what? Torah? And in the second version, the Chacham is someone who values their children. Nothing about Torah. Children above the cattle. So why would the Medrash parallel those two Chachamim? The Chachamim are two totally different people, l'chora, in those two Pshatim of the Medrash. Secondly, the critique that the Medrash gives us of the 2.5 tribes is such a scathing critique that it seems almost unrealistic. If you were to ask any simple person, even a lowlife, even a nobody, would you prefer to give up your money or to give up your children, or even give up one of your children versus money? Anybody you know, anybody you and I would ever speak to, would tell you without any hesitation whatsoever that they'll get rid of their money before they give up any children. Yet these people who saw the man, who saw the be'er, who saw the anane akavod every single day of their lives, they were card-carrying members of the Dor Dei, of the greatest generation ever to live, and they valued their money over the children? What are we supposed to make of that? Is that even possible? Is it shaykh that we can talk like that? So Rav Yosef Salant explains that the Jewish people found themselves in a very unique position for a nation at war. Medrash explains that normally when a nation would fight a war, what would they have to do? They would have to attack the cities to fight them one by one. Obviously, that method of fighting took a toll. It was very time-consuming. And even after completing the victory, what are you left with? What did you win? The victor is left with a war-ravaged city, and you need to rebuild the entire city. But the Jewish people had a totally different experience. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ma ani matriach al banai kol zos, latzorah kol ir v'ir. Why should I trouble Klal Yisrael so much to have to go and fight each city individually? Nasan b'leiv kol anshei ha'melachama latzeis min ha'yaros. V'niskabtzu kulam l'makom echad, v'sham naflu. So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu do? Brilliant. He inspired each of them, each of the battalions and the groups of soldiers in all these cities, to leave the city and attack the Bnei Yisrael. So the Bnei Yisrael were able to meet them on a battlefield far away from the city. And when we beat them soundly, it didn't destroy the cities. U'misham holchu Yisrael el ha'arim. We were able to waltz right into those cities and there was no one there. There was no opposition. Who was left in the cities? It was the women and children. So we were able to walk right in and take over a city that was still flourishing and that infrastructure was still intact. By the time the Jews arrived in the cities, there were no more battles to fight. The cities were in moving condition. They walked into fully decorated homes that had existing community centers. There was no work that needed to be done. So in the 2.5 Shvatim speak about the sheep first, it's not because they value the cattle more than they value their children. No, it's that the infrastructure was already there. It was in place for their wives and children to live comfortably. There were homes, there were places to go, there were centers for communal life. Now, of course, they'll have to make some adjustments. Add a few bedrooms, however you adjust to a from home, right? You add a few bedrooms, put an extra sink in the kitchen, expand the dining room for Shabbos company, pull out the flat screen TV, hopefully, turn the churches into something that we can use. But that can wait until later. You know, all those adjustments can wait until later. The basic necessities were there. The infrastructure was there. What they really needed immediately was a place for the cattle. That was necessary. There was no infrastructure to house the cattle. And that's why they mentioned the cattle first. Chas v'shalom, that they're going to love the cattle more than the children. They're not meshugayim. Of course they love their children more than they love the cattle. No, all it means to suggest is that they felt that the existing infrastructure was enough to hold their children over until they can really work on building yeshivas and building a proper infrastructure for their children. What they had was good enough. For the cattle, they needed to start from scratch. Now Moshe Rabbeinu, though, had to correct them. They can't say that the present infrastructure will suffice for their children until they have time to do something about it later on. That's not okay. It's not okay to just push it off and say, yeah, I'll take care of it later. The child is going to walk past an Avodah Zarah and say, hey, Abba, what's a house of Molech worship? The child's going to see a university campus and he's going to say, who is St. John? The signs of Avodah Zarah and the decadent society that preceded them are all over the place. Everywhere you turn, you see it. The child may be able to physically survive. The physical infrastructure is there, that's for sure. But the exposure to this infrastructure will be a major blow to his spiritual development. No matter how holy the parents, a child growing up, l'mashal in Las Vegas, is going to be exposed to a lot more than a child growing up in the Eir HaAtika, in the old city of Yerushalayim. It just is. It's just the way it is. The exposure is totally different. And this problem becomes particularly poignant when we consider the fact that the fathers were going to have to be out of the homes for an extended period of time. The fathers were going to have to help their brothers fight the wars on the other side of the Yarden. They were going to be out of their homes for a while as they were conquering in Eretz Yisrael. So what kind of atmosphere are the children going to be in while they're away, while the parents aren't home to guide the children? The television is going to become the babysitter. Is the child going to see any Kedusha? Chas v'shalom, the child's going to see the opposite of Kedusha. And notice that the mitzvahs that they were commanded in upon entering Eretz Yisrael include the utter destruction of the Avodah Zarah and their houses of worship. Avot ha'abdun es kol ha'makomos asher avdu sham ha'goyim. V'nitzatztem es mizbechosam v'shibartem es matzevosam. U'psili Eloheim tigadeun v'vadtem es shemam min ha'makom ahu. And those places were to be replaced with bati midrashos, bati knesios, so that they can feel comfortable leaving their children there. And this is why Moshe Rabbeinu told them, "Bnu lachem arim," and not as they originally suggested, "V'yashav tapeinu ba'arei amivtzar." Let our children live where they are in these fortified cities. Moshe Rabbeinu says, "No, bnu lachem arim. You need to build cities. The job is a much greater one than the job for the cattle. They have to take down and rebuild an entire city. Then they could start worrying about the animals." That was their mistake. But how could they have made such a mistake in the first place? The source of the mistake was their focus on money, the focus on protecting their wealth. They forgot to take into account the spiritual price of retaining wealth. You see, every financial decision, every decision in the world of Gashmi has some sort of effect, sometimes positive, sometimes negative, in the world of Ruchnius, on both a person and his family. A person takes a different job, and it affects his family. If there's going to be a major lifestyle change, the halacha says a person has to go and ask his wife, consult with his wife, make sure that she's okay with it. He's not allowed to just make commitments like that without consulting with his family. It has an impact. It has an impact on the gashmius of his family, yes, but on the ruchnius of his family. And when the Medrash speaks of the Chacham Uksil, it contrasts someone who's focused on Torah with someone who's focused on money. In reality, we have to be focused on both. We need to grow in Torah each and every day. And we need to support our families with a decent parnasa. It's a chiyuv that we have. We have to do it. Absolute responsibility. That's not the question. The question is not which one do we pay attention to. We pay attention to both. The question is, do we look at Torah decisions through the lens of money? Or do we look at financial decisions through the lens of Torah? Does one decide where to live, where to send his kids to school, based on money? Or does one decide whether to take the new job offer or go on that vacation based on the spiritual impact it will make on himself and his family? The Medrash was clear. They didn't value their money over their children. It never says, "Shechivivu es mamonam yoser mitapam," that they love their money more than their children. No. Look at the Lashon. It says, "Shechivu es mamonam yoser min hanefashos." It was the neshama that they were too willing to compromise. Both the Chacham who has Torah to his right, Miyamino Eishtas Lama, and Moshe Rabbeinu, in this conversation with the 2.5 tribes, are stressing the same thing. These are not two different Chachamim. They're stressing the same thing. Namely, every decision has to be made with an eye on our true focus, with an eye on the Torah, and with an eye on how our families are going to strive in Ruchnius, how our families are going to grow in Ruchnius, how our families are going to be able to experience Torah on a high level. And that's how our decisions have to be made. So yes, financial success is something we pray for and it's something we need. And anyone who tells you otherwise is lying to you. Of course you need it. Of course we need money. We need it to survive. We need it to be able to do well. We need it to build yeshivos. We need it to build shuls. We need it to support aniyim. We need it. There's no doubt. But the question is, does it become dominant? Is it something that we are so focused on that we're willing to sacrifice, God forbid, not the physical well-being, but are we willing to sacrifice the spiritual well-being of our children for the sake of this goal? Or are we going to be able to have the courage to say, and the fortitude to say, that first and foremost, the questions that I ask myself are in Ruchnius, the Ruchnius for myself, for my family, for my children, and then working around that, figuring out how to make everything else fall into place as well.